Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Packers missing some players. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers host the 49ers at Lambeau Field, but head coach Matt LaFleur says they'll likely be without two of their best defensive starters. Cornerback Jair Alexander has a torn PCL, suffered 3 weeks ago in Jacksonville. Then at Wednesday's practice, rookie linebacker Edgerrin Cooper pulled a hamstring.
Did not practice for Jair and Edgerrin Cooper.
Any concern about Sunday for him?
Yes.
Kickoff at 3:25. College football, Wisconsin heads to Nebraska to play the Cornhuskers at Memorial Stadium. Game time tomorrow, 2:30. Nebraska, 1.5-point favorites. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Pacers tonight in Milwaukee.
Okay, we have an incredible team coming in. Indiana beat us, I think, 4 or 5 times last year. No. Way more. 7 times, 7, 8 times. We got to play defense. We got to move the ball. They want to play fast. We got to sprint back. We got to take guys serious. But we're trending towards the right direction right now, so I'm happy.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
The John and Gordy Show.
Look who's here. It's Mike McCabe.
Look at the patterns of history, because it's important to realize that this has been cyclical and that we have seen the loss of sort of a we society and the emergence of a me society. And
right.
And how could that be better manifested than having a certifiable narcissist in the White House? We've gone through these periods before. Light has been found at the end of the tunnel.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX.
Listen to sports coverage from Mike Clemens on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. This election was, well, as I keep saying, it was about anger. People are angry that life, a lot of people I talk to, angry that life didn't turn out the way it was supposed to be, especially my generation, Generation X. We were told if you work hard, you played by the rules, you'd get ahead, that our birthright was to do better than our parents' generation did. And for a lot of people, it's been a struggle. It's much more difficult than we thought it should be. And look, we lived through a deindustrialization. Our working lives were losing manufacturing job after manufacturing job. We were told by politicians, you don't need that dirty stuff. Just go get an education. And we went and we did that. And still, people are struggling to make ends meet. And then the inflation of the pandemic, which hit the globe, it hit the rest of the globe much worse than us. But this election was about anger. This is not a mandate, in my view, for all of the horrible policies that Donald Trump and the Republicans are brewing up for us. This is not the mandate that they think it is to ram through Project 2025. This is none of that. So for me, it's about, well, what went wrong? Where did Democrats make their big mistake? And I've been saying for years, they made their biggest mistake by not investing in infrastructure to get their messaging out. You can have the greatest message in the world. You can have the greatest punchlines to your joke. But if nobody hears them, It doesn't matter. And I think Joe Biden had a good message. I think Democrats coming out of the pandemic had a good message. We invested in infrastructure. We're investing in reshoring manufacturing. We're pushing for people to get higher wages through unionizing. All of the things, the secret sauce of my grandparents' generation that built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity, they were, those policies were moving in the right direction. We're just a little impatient. And I hear Elon Musk say, well, you know, we're going to have some temporary pain and suffering, you know, but it'll be, we're not that society. And I think he'll learn very quickly. Their polling numbers will go really tanking if the inflation pops up. Because understand, already what you're seeing is you're seeing Walmart and the Targets and all of the other retailers across the country going, hey, we're going to start raising prices. You know, if the Trump tariffs are coming, we're going to preemptively raise prices. They're already talking about it. And I argue, interestingly enough, they're probably going to do it between now and Christmas, you know, cash in a little bit so they can blame Biden as he's going out the door. But it's the threat of broad-based Trump tariffs. So the question becomes again, you know, what did Democrats do wrong? I thought Kamala Harris ran a very good campaign, the best she could given the situation. But what message would have been different? And I argue there was nothing that Kamala Harris could do differently that would have changed the outcome. This was an anger election. This was a punish someone election. This was not a referendum for Trump policies because we don't know really what his policies are, or we're told we don't know. I say it's Project 2025. I've had a lot of my red hat friends say, no, he wouldn't put his name on that. Have you been paying attention to who he's putting into different cabinet positions? That's going to be the agenda. Now, look, lost an election. You got to lick your wounds, Democrats. You got to come out and figure out what the move forward is. And as I've been saying for a long time, you don't bring identity politics to a class war. Politics is about class war. It's about the economy. It's about which side are you on? Which direction do we want this country to go, policy-wise? This was not that campaign. Harris tried to make it about policy, about, hey, this is what we're going to do to make lives better. She had a plan for everything. Not as detailed as Hillary Clinton. She learned that lesson, but still had a plan. When you listen to Donald Trump, it was about grievance. It was about hatred and anger. And, you know, got pretty ugly there for a bit. And we'll see if all of the things that he said, we'll see if there's going to be a giant bus belt to go get those illegals. And if we're going to use the U.S. military to go door to door to get them. We'll see. We'll also see if he does put the broad-based tariffs on that is going to give Walmart the cover to continue to raise prices and, well, clearly make everyone angry. You know, is he going to do all of the deregulating? Is he going to do all of the attacks on, you name the organization? Well, I'm telling you, I think he will. And that's why I think, you know, here at the program, one of the things we're going to be focusing on is, one, pointing out the bad stuff he's going to do. Because as I've been saying, the solutions are going to come from the suffering. The bad stuff that they do, the savagery that's coming, will draw people together. Even red hats who are going to be harmed by this, even the Trump voters, even some of the most ardent Trump voters. And for me, there is an opportunity on the other side of these bad policies that we know are coming to reach people, to unite people, to bring people together and say, look, we can go a different route. We can go a better route. We've seen some of those policies. The only thing I know Donald Trump is going to do, the only thing I know for certain that they're going to do, is they're going to give more tax cuts to the very wealthy. Now, of course, there'll be some, you know, some crumbs for everyone else. There'll be some little bits and pieces of you're gonna do maybe a little bit okay, and they'll sunset that down the road, you know, when the Democrats take over. Because Republicans are very good strategic thinkers. They got massive think tanks. They spend billions of dollars on the state policy network, all these think tanks, all these really smart people who sit around and dream up really bad ideas on how they're going to harm the working class, but also how to sell it to them where the poison sounds good. the poison sounds yummy. Because what they're, how they sell it is, well, we're going after those people. Your problems aren't yours or your fault or ours for that matter. They're those people. They are the reason. Instead of going, hold on, those people, I'm closer to them than I'm closer to Elon Musk. And the fact that Elon Musk is going to be in charge of slashing and burning spending should scare every one of my Red Hat friends who rely on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, any type of assistance program. He's coming for you as well as me. So we got a lot to do. So today, going to spend the hour talking with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. He's going to share some thoughts on, well, what the campaign did right, wrong, and maybe, you know, some bit about the transition. So going to take a quick break. When we come back, Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, you know, what were the lessons of the 2024 election for Democrats? You know, when Republicans took a beating, they did their autopsy. They came out with, this long report. They didn't listen to it, but they came out with a report. They did some inward looking, and Democrats are doing that right now. They're going, what went wrong? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? And how do we fix that? I know that those conversations are happening, but, you know, again, will they actually listen? Now, I've been saying for the last nearly 20 years where I think we should go, but I wanted to get the thoughts of someone that I respect and I think usually has his hand on the right switch. That's why I've asked former Alabama Senator Doug Jones to come share some thoughts about the 2024 election and, you know, and beyond. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Rick. Thanks for having me again.
So what happened?
we got gut punched. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of analytics that comes out of this, Rick, but the bottom line is that we just didn't reach the voters that we thought we were reaching. And I say we thought we were reaching because we really did. I mean, I will be honest about it. I am usually I'm usually kind of a pessimist almost sometimes when at elections. I'm never really the eternal optimist about things. But I was really optimistic about this. And what I saw afterwards, and you, we talked, I talked to and did the media, and I was very bullish on winning the presidency, keeping the House, or winning the House back. And even, you know, people like Sherrod Brown and John Tester helping us keep the Senate. But clearly, on reflection, forget all of the messaging and things like that. What I really believe happened to some extent is that the Democratic base was so excited and so relieved. As much as people loved Joe Biden, they were somewhat relieved when he dropped out, and they were so excited to rally around Kamala Harris that they got the flags and they got Tim Walz and they had enthusiastic crowds, and we were living the dream. But it was the same people. It was our base. We weren't expanding that joy and happiness and euphoria over this campaign. We were just celebrating among ourselves, and we wanted to be a part of it. So we had more people come to rallies and things like this. But we ended up, as much as I thought we ended up not really reaching those extra voters that we needed to get across the finish line. And the other piece of this too, and I think this is one of the real lessons to be learned here, is that our Democrats' way of campaigning is dead. It is long gone. People, I was in Philadelphia the weekend before the election. I was in Georgia the weekend before that. I really truly believe that our ground game, which was tremendous. I thought she ran a great campaign. Our ground game was tremendous. I thought it would get us across the finish line in these close races. It didn't. People don't care whether you knock on the doors anymore. I mean, you can get a ground game going, but we didn't do the kind of thing where our messages were getting to the right people. They were not listening to our messages, or they were not receiving our messages for whatever reason. And so it's a combination of all that.
So let me ask you, because, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, you know, Labor, Democrats, whatever, you know, they run a couple months before an election. They run, you know, here's our ideas. And it's that short period of time before the election, whereas Republicans are running continuous elections. You got cable news that's continuously running an election. You've got talk radio that's continually running this kind of campaigning. They're continually talking to people, where Democrats, Labor, the left, however you want to frame that, they don't seem to be doing it. And I keep saying, you know, we lost a lot of those voters because they were feeling pain. The inflation was hurting. When they go to the grocery store, the prices were high, and their wages weren't going as far as they were, as they used to. There was real information there that I don't think, you know, made its way up the ladder, so to speak. So I think that had a lot to do with it. This constant campaign, these relationships that are consistently built throughout year and year and year and year. I think that was the bigger problem here.
No, 100%, Rick. Look, Republicans have an infrastructure that they rely on 7 days a week, 12 months out of the year, 365 days out of the year, and they always engage people. They're constantly, and Democrats are not doing that. We've not done it for a long time. We wait until election season, and then we start to engage. We register a ton of voters, but we don't keep those voters engaged. And I absolutely agree with you that we've got to make sure that we engage voters on an ongoing basis. And we got to go. I've said this for a long time, that we got to go where they are. But that doesn't mean just literally going and knocking on their door. It means understanding where they are in their lives.
Exactly.
And what's important to them. You know, there's an interesting thing about the inflation piece of this, Rick, because everybody, especially younger folks, said that the economy was such a big issue for them. And it was. And we all know what they really meant was that it was inflation and the cost of goods, because they had been paying a certain price for goods and services, and now they were paying more, and they didn't think they were getting value. And in part, I really do believe, that a large part of that was because so many people in this country that have never really experienced inflation, unless you were 16 years old in the late 70s. And driving a car in which all of a sudden gas started going up through the roof, and there were long gas lines, and we started experiencing inflation that was hitting 10% and interest rates hitting 20%. You've never really experienced inflation. You've seen this gradual change in prices that you adjust and without thinking. And this time, worldwide, there was this inflation that all of a sudden just grabbed people by the throat. And that's one thing that we kept talking about the economy, but they kept talking about prices.
Yep.
And that was a really important thing. And we never got through to those folks.
No, and this is a big part of what I believe the answer to this is. And, you know, I've always talked about the class war. Understand, you know, working people, they're taking it on the chin time and time again, where we've got a wealth class that has never been happier. They've never been wealthier. We've got the biggest, largest, richest wealth class in the history of, I would argue, in the history of humanity. And yet we've got people who are struggling to put food on the table. So for me, the idea of bringing identity politics to the class war, I think that's where we kind of missed the boat a lot.
Sure. 100%. 100%. We've been doing it for too long, and there are folks that we're so afraid that we might offend an activist that we just hold back on all of this. And We haven't been getting the infrastructure for messages has not been out there. We just have not had that. And we did, we got so caught up in again, in the joy of this campaign. We forgot to look at where people are really getting their information. And I say information rather than news, because most people are not getting news. Right. They're not looking at news. They're just looking at a headline or a TikTok video, and they're getting some information that may or may not even be accurate.
Yeah, a lot of mis and disinformation out there. You know, I had one of my Red Hat friends tell me, "You wait, January 21st, we're not paying any more income tax." And I'm going, "I'm not sure where you heard that, but you're going to be very disappointed."
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. There is just, it is some of the craziest stuff out there that people are, you know, I hope your friend remembers that not just on January 21st. I hope he remembers that come 2026 when elections happen again in the midterms, and then 4 years from now when he is still paying income tax.
Understand.
He's going to be paying just as much, but you know what? The deficits are going to be greater, and he's going to be paying higher prices probably.
Yeah, but Doug, understand, the price for him of being my friend is I'm going to remind him of that every day, that we have to pay income tax.
Of course.
He's never living. And I told him that. I said, "You're never living this down. You do understand that." Because he said that was the reason that he voted for Trump, because Trump was going to do away with income tax. And I said, "Well, you're going to be sorely disappointed. And boy, am I going to bust your shoes." But here's the part of this, and this is where I keep saying the way we reach my Red Hat friend and bring him somewhat back to the fold, because he's a good union guy. Look, this is a good, decent guy, good family man, good community member, just kind of, you know, lost on the politics of the information that he consumes. So for me, it's not so much rubbing his nose in it as reaching out and going, "Hey, you remember when you said that and it was kind of dumb? You know, how about now waking up to a little bit of reality, and we work towards doing something to help you and me and other working people in a way that's going to benefit us as a community?" I think we have to do that more than just rubbing their nose in it.
There's no question about that, Rick, because these are good people. They're decent people. As you said, a lot of them are union people. They work hard. They've got families. They care about the country. And we have to do that. And for instance, another response to him might have been, okay, he's going to do away with the income tax. So who is going to pay for our national defense? Who is going to pay to do the things that we hold sacred? Who is going to pay for the services that you have in this country that a government provides, that the federal government provides? And they do it through the collection of income taxes. That is how we generally pay for this. You cannot put tariffs on people and let China pay for it, because that's not the way that works.
Right. No, I'm right there with you. But again, that's a conversation that's a lot deeper than the inch of where his understanding and interest is. All he wants to hear is, "I'm not paying taxes. I can have a better life." And ultimately, what should unite us, and this is where I keep coming back to, is this idea that we all want the same things. We want good jobs, safe neighborhoods, good schools for our kids, opportunities for our children to do better than we are. I think we all still want that American dream that you and I grew up believing in.
Yeah, no, look, I've said for a long time, Rick, and people nod and they agree, because here's the deal. We do want those same things. And if you, at a very high level, we want those same opportunities for us and for our kids and for our grandkids. We want good health care. We want a military that is going to protect and defend us. We want to have things for our retirement and our old age where there is some security. We actually all want, I say all, but most vast majority of people in this country want to have some safety net for those who can't always provide for themselves because of sickness or health or some kind of status. We all want those things. It's getting to those things that's the problem. That's where there's the divergence. But if we could focus on the things that we want and say, "All right, let's try to figure this out a little bit." And I don't think we have enough of that. I'm afraid that with the new administration, we're not going to get any of that, because they're going to be basically a my way or the highway. I hope that is not the case. And I know it's not the case with many of my former colleagues in the Senate, but they may not control this process.
No, I fear we see a lot of what is in that Project 2025 being the agenda, and I see it happening very quickly. And the pain, and I keep saying, look, the solutions will be in the suffering. The savagery of what they're going to do, I think we will find the solutions, and we will come back together, because I think that's the only time in this country that we really do unite, is when there's pain and struggle and suffering. And maybe it's going to take the imposition of that pain by this administration to wake people up a little bit. So you're in all of these conversations that are going on within the party about, you know, what we screwed up with, what we did well, you know, what direction we want to go. Does there seem to be a consensus that we're somewhere in that world? Or is there, well, something else that I'm not hearing or seeing?
You know, I think there's a lot of conversations taking place, but I think right now people are just digesting where we are. And part of the problem, too, is that it's not just analyzing what we did in the last few years, but the uncertainty about this next administration and responding to that, that chaos, that uncertainty makes it a little bit more difficult to see where we go. I think, you know, look, there is, I believe, at least a lot of the people that I'm talking to, and a lot of the folks that they see, but believe that there is a need for the party to get back to more of a center left, more centrist angle. And that's not that we haven't had that. If you look at the Biden administration, with all that they did with the economy and the CHIPS Act and on trade and all of those things, it is really, those messages are fine. It is just that they get drowned out by some on the left. And I really don't think that that's where the country is. I don't think that's where the party is. I've never believed that. But I think that the messages that we we've got to find that better platform and platforms to get those messages to people. And we got to go into areas that we're not comfortable going.
No, look, and this is where I come back to, as a liberal, I believe in more speech as opposed to less. I believe in tolerance, empathy, compassionate. I believe in all of those things, and tolerance being a big part of it. We talk about tolerance for things that we don't like. I've been saying for a while, we've got to be tolerant of people who may not agree on every issue. That there's almost a purity test. Like on the right, there's an absolutist pledge mentality. I don't want to see that on the other side either. And look, you know, Trump and the Republicans spend an awful lot of money on the transgender issue. And a lot of people that I know don't have a problem per se with people who transition and live that kind of lifestyle, but they don't want to have to accept it as, you know, normal or whatever in their lives. And this pushing them away because they're not in absolute purist lines, I think that's dangerous. And I think it's created these silo lines that the Republicans and the moneyed interest have certainly used against us.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. I agree with you that those ads hurt. You know, I've watched Seth Moulton from Massachusetts, who's taken a lot of heat for some things he said, that, you know, he personally, you know, did not want his daughter in a sport in which a former man was competing against her, a former boy was competing against her, and the backlash has been tremendous. We cannot continue to do that. We got to understand people have concerns. They have deep concerns. Yep. We've got to recognize that. We don't have to give up what we believe for people and their opportunities, but we've got to understand, I think, where others are coming from, because they're not really coming from them. And a lot of times, and not always, there are racists out there, there's misogynists, there's homophobic people out there, but a lot of people, they do have some religious and moral belief that is held. We just have not answered. We were so afraid of offending somebody on our own side that we just did not have any response at all. And no response is worse than the wrong response.
And that's what I've been saying for a long time. You know, when people have asked me, I said, quite frankly, I don't care about the issue. You know, and that's the response. That's the best you're getting out of me. I've had friends who have transitioned who have told me, hey, I'm going this route. And I say, look, I hope this is what makes you happy. Love you. Wish you the best. I don't understand it. Probably never going to understand it. And I'm probably grateful that I don't. But you have the right to pursue life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And I hope this is what it does for you. And I think that's the right position in this country to say, look, you have the right to do what you want. I don't have to do it, but you, if you want to, God bless you. Live your best life.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. We just kind of stuck our head in the sand about that, and that those ads hurt a lot. And again, I think it hurt us a lot by just not responding, just pretending, well, the issue doesn't affect enough people that they it's not going to hurt us. Well, it's not that it affects a lot of people. People don't know whether it'll ultimately affect them or not, and they're going to. It's a concerning issue for them, and we just didn't respond.
No, the answer to me, Doug, is look, you know, if you're being discriminated against, I'm going to be in your corner. If you're getting fired for no reason, I'm in your corner. If you're getting thrown out of your home, I'm in your corner. If you're getting assaulted, I'm in your corner. But I'm not marching in the street with you wearing you know, assless chaps and wearing a sparkler. That's not going to happen. And I hope. I hope that becomes part of it. I've got to take a quick break here, Doug. Can you stick around through the break?
Absolutely. Happy to.
I want to take a quick break because on the other side, I want to talk about, Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. What the? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Covering the games and biggest sports news, listen daily to Mike Clemens on Civic Media.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This Civic Media station is currently broadcasting the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks over the air. Due to streaming restrictions, we can't provide you the broadcast here. You can find an affiliated station at civicmedia.us to find the game over the air. We'll also have updates on the game and the biggest sports news from Mike Clemens daily on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
Earl Ingram.
Don from Milwaukee.
I enjoy your show. Right now, at a time like this, you are great therapy for me. I don't know what I'd do without you guys.
We enjoy you as well. That's the importance of Civic Media and this platform. And Sandy and I take this seriously. We're going to continue to do whatever it is we can to make sure that people like you continue to get your voices heard.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, the nominee process so far during the Trump transition, if you will, comical. It's been a circus. And look, we said it was going to be a circus. This is the plan. This is the plot. And Matt Gaetz for Attorney General is one of those things where you go, really? Really? And yes, it's all about, here's the shiny thing, folks. Pay attention to this while all of the other things are going on and might actually slip through. Same thing with RFK Jr. But that's why I've asked Doug Jones, former Alabama senator, to stick around and share some thoughts on, well, what this transition has looked like and maybe what kind of crazy we can expect. Doug, thanks for sticking around.
Hey, my pleasure, Brett. Glad to stay with you.
So I got
to
tell you, I was hoping that if Kamala Harris had won, and she had become president, my hope of hopes, and you're going to maybe disagree with me, my hope of hopes was you were going to be the attorney general. I would have loved to see you, a bright guy, a guy who honors the law, a compassionate, smart guy, be that. But now I'm looking at Matt freaking Gaetz? Seriously?
It's a long road from Doug Jones to Matt Gaetz, isn't it? I mean, it's a real downhill spiral, so to speak. And that's not to say much about me. It says a hell of a lot about him. You know, look, we should not be too surprised, though. I mean, I don't think that there is I don't think there's virtually any vetting truly going on with any of these people. These are all just Donald Trump loyalists. They have these crazy ideas, but then that's what he ran on. He ran on this crazy stuff. And Matt Gaetz is not a disruptor. I keep hearing Mike Johnson, the speaker, and others say, oh, people voted for disruption. They voted for change, whatever. Matt Gaetz is not a disruptor, Rick. He's a destroyer. And that is going to be a real, real problem. Robert F. Kennedy is not going to make America healthy again. He's going to destroy the health of millions of children in this country if he gets fluoride out of water, if he doesn't do vaccines, it is going to be a real problem. These people are not being vetted appropriately, but at the same time, they don't need to be, because they espouse what Donald Trump wants to hear, and they are going to do his bidding, and it is a scary prospect.
Yeah, since you brought up RFK, you know, I was going to get to him a minute, but since you brought it up, you know, I go back to when my oldest daughter was born in 2002, and RFK Jr. was out in full force then, talking about how Tamiflu was in all the vaccines and the mercury was causing autism, and your children are going to be autistic if you give them vaccines. Now, fortunately, my wife and I have a very good relationship with our family doctor, with our pediatrician, people we trust. But sadly, a lot of people don't have that kind of relationship with their doctors that we had. Right. And it's getting worse now as we've consolidated healthcare. I fear that now you're right, that me in 2024, as opposed to 2002, might actually listen to him and go, yeah, that makes sense. Maybe I don't get them vaccinated, which is scary.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's absolutely nuts, and the reason why more and more will actually do that is because that Donald Trump politicized COVID and COVID vaccines the way that he did. The far right did this. It plays into the whole, the government should not tell me what to do. This should be my own decisions, and they play into these conspiracy theories. But it's a real problem, I think. Given that, you know, look, there is we're seeing already a rise in measles outbreaks in the United States that we haven't seen in a half a century. We're beginning to see that. Robert F. Kennedy is essentially running, you know, his platform is basically make measles great again. And that's what we're going to see. More and more infectious diseases out there, more and more where you're going to have problems. Even there was one city, and I can't remember, maybe it's Winter Haven, Florida, that is already going to start pulling fluoride out of their drinking water. That's a lot of RFK influence. Yeah. I mean, this is not something that, I mean, look, this is something that has taken generations, decades, centuries to develop over time. And we have become a better country for it. We become a better world for it. You know, we may not have the greatest healthcare delivery system in the world, but we dang sure have a pretty good prevention system with vaccines and the things that we do to help people maintain some semblance of health. Yeah. And that, I fear, is going to be rolled back in a big way.
No, I fear as well. But, you know, I think of, you know, people my age and yours as well, that, you know, we had the mumps and measles and chicken pox. You know, we got natural immunity. Been hearing that phrase a lot. What do you say to that, to people my age and a little bit older who go, Doug, you know, look, I had the mumps and measles. No big thing. No big deal. We got through it.
Yeah, you're right. We got through it. You got through it. A lot of people didn't get through it, Rick. A lot of people, there were a lot of people that died, a lot of people that lost a lot of time and effort. Think about the loss of production if all of a sudden people are having to stay home to care for sick children again, as much as they might do, more than just a cold or a sniffle. Think about how that will affect the economy. Think about the number of lives that could potentially be lost. Look what we went through with COVID now before we had vaccines. There is the potential damage is incredible, because here's the other thing I keep going back to is that, you know, look, there are risks in everything. Sure. There's a risk. There is a slight risk in every vaccine. There is a slight risk in just about everything we do. There is a slight risk when you go to a fast food restaurant and chew food and maybe choke on it. There's a slight risk that when you get in a car, you're going to get broadsided and killed in an automobile accident. We do those things, but the overall benefit of vaccines is proven. It's not like we're making this crap up. It is statistically proven how well they and how effective they are, and how they have kept America healthy from the disease that they're being vaccinated against. And that's a real critical component. So without that, who the hell knows what's going to happen to this country?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, I keep having people tell me, no, no, the institutions will hold. And I'm going, I don't know. These are people who, they don't believe in the rule of law. They don't believe in science. They're not going through a vetting process. And I argue a little bit differently than most people. I argue they know who they're getting. They know what crimes and backgrounds and all of this deep stuff.
Oh, yeah.
People, they just don't care. And I would argue they're picking them because of that. You know, but, you know, I've had people disagree with me. I think that's it. I think it's about the chaos. I really do believe it's about the circus, so that we're focused on the circus and all of the insanity and the chaos while they're literally robbing us blind.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. There's so many head fakes that are going on these things. It's just stunning. I really think now, looking back on the campaign, that you know, everybody kept talking about how Donald Trump's speeches and his rallies were getting darker and darker, and they were getting more racist, and they were getting more misogynistic. And the campaign, the Harris campaign, responded to that. They were going more and more on protecting democracy, you know, that he's a danger, those kind of things. I think those speeches were a head fake, because what they knew is that people wanted to know, they wanted to hear about the economy. They didn't want to hear about the darker things or the brighter things. They were tired of the joy. They wanted to talk about the economy. They wanted to know, what are you going to do for me at my kitchen table? And we weren't doing that.
Yeah, no,
we were responding.
Point.
And I can't fault the campaign for doing it. I'm just looking back on it. It looked like a head fake from Trump, because he knew exactly what he was doing, and we fell for it.
Yeah.
And I can't fault the campaign, Rick. I'm not one of these people who on the day before the election and election day was saying, they ran a great campaign. Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, I thought they ran a great campaign. I was not one of these to say on the next day, oh my God, how did they screw this up? You know, they should have done this and should have done that.
No,
I still believe they ran a good campaign. It was just a traditional campaign that needs to be retooled for the future.
No, I argue they played the hands that they were dealt the best way you could play them. I thought the cards they were dealt, they played in the best way possible. I thought they did. They ran a very good campaign, very efficient. I think the convention was very well run. The messaging that came out of that convention was where I wanted it to be. It was about
Absolutely.
The economy. It was about, you know, re-strengthening and reunionizing the country. There was a lot that came out of it. We just didn't have the vehicles to get that message home. And look, I go back to what I said a bit ago. I do believe that Republicans are going to do all of the things that they say they're going to do. I believe a lot of what's in Project 2025 is what the agenda will be, and it's going to harm people. And the solutions, as I've been saying, will come out of the suffering and savagery. And I look at the appointment or the nomination on Tuesday of Dr. Oz to run the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. This to me is a kind of a really big freaking deal, because in this next 4 years, I believe we will have completely privatized Medicare. And I think that is the beginning of the end of Medicare for seniors in this country. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
No, I agree. I agree with that. A TV charlatan running CMS is just stunning to me. And I agree. Look, we tried to get this message out to seniors. We tried to get the message out to others that this administration wants to cut Social Security. They want to privatize Social Security. They want to privatize Medicare. They want to do away with Medicaid altogether, or just make it to where states can't afford to do it. They don't want to give them the monies. I think we're going to see a lot of changes. People said, oh, no, because I saw ads from Donald Trump. I will protect your Social Security. You know, I will do this and that. He tried to cut Social Security with every budget that he had when he was president of the United States. He tried to cut Medicare. He tried to change Medicaid. He's never been anything but for privatizing as much of the federal government as he can. And if he can do it and find a way to personally make money, him and his family, he'll do that too.
Boy, look, you might have, you've got all the big insurance companies who have their Medicare Advantage. Who knows? Maybe we'll have Trump Advantage. Maybe that's coming. A fancier version of pay or die. But I got to, since you brought up the cutting, we now evidently have a government, a Department of Government Efficiency now. Run by two, going to have two guys, which, you know, real efficient. But Elon Musk, who Trump praised for being one of the top cutters and union busters in the country, how concerned are we with this new department that hasn't been put forth by Congress, hasn't been voted on? We just, out of whole cloth, came up with this and gave Musk a title and a task. Are we concerned about this?
Yeah, no. You know, look, he is charged with slicing off large swaths of the federal budget. Now, this is a guy, by the way, who is making a gazillion dollars off of the federal budget, okay? His companies are making a ton of money. Now, I will give him credit. These companies that are making money off are some of the greatest companies in the world. They've technologically and innovative companies. They're unbelievable. But he has such a conflict of interest because the government is paying him and his companies so much money. But yet he is going to take and cut the benefits of hardworking men and women, those that need that safety net. That's where this is going to come. These cuts are going to come. And they can do that through the budget process because Trump can veto any budget that Congress passes. He can work with the government to try to do this. And remember, we've got a debt ceiling issue that's coming up again. And it's going to be interesting whether or not the president will support a debt ceiling bill again. Yeah. You know, I say again, he reluctantly signed a couple of them when he was president. I'm not so sure he does that this time. I'm not so sure that he agrees with the budget. We are kicking appropriations down the road again. It's going to be once he is president, and that's going to be the telltale sign. What is this first budget that Donald Trump is going to be presented with, whether he signs it or not? There's been a lot of work done on it, but my guess is they're going to start over again. And Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency, which is a code name for his cryptocurrency, Doge, will have a huge influence on where the cuts go. Huge influence.
Now, it's been reported, and I heard him say it, that he wants to cut 30% of government spending, or about $2 trillion from the federal budget. What, you know, as a senator, as you're looking at the budget and you're looking at what can be cut from discretionary spending and what can't be cut from mandatory spending, is it possible in any way, shape, or form, in any world, even if you had a magic wand, to take $2 trillion out of the budget and not collapse the economy?
No, I don't think so. That's the bottom line. I do not think so. And if he started doing that, people are going to be up in arms. They don't. That's the disconnect, Rick, between your friend who said he's going to do away with income taxes and the reality. They don't connect the dots of cutting government spending with cutting government services and those things that people rely on every day. And I just, as a practical matter, you just can't do that. You're not going to be able to cut that.
But I got to tell you, you know, there's a lot of things over the years that I've thought our country is not and would not allow to have happen. And yet we've seemed to be doing a lot of those, crossing those lines that I thought we would never as a society. And I ask the question now, are we a society that would let people die on the streets, let them starve, let them, you know, go without health care? Are we a society that would let granny freeze to death in the wintertime so that we could have these magical cuts? Because that's what this stuff will do. There are real world consequences and real suffering. And the question I have is, are we a society as a general, not me or you individually, but as a society, you think we're okay with that?
I don't think we're going to be okay with that. I don't think we're going to be okay when you start cutting the farm bill and the subsidies that go to farmers to kind of keep their subsistence and help them get through the low seasons and the droughts and the problems that all farmers have. And they're going to cut those those payments and subsidies going to farmers. I don't think they're going to stand for not properly funding FEMA to help people with these natural disasters that we go. They want to do away or cut the funding of FEMA And just think about that in states like Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and the disasters that they have seen just in the last 18 months. Yeah. I don't think they're going to want to do away with cutting the National Weather Service and NOAA, and where people get their information to take shelter from some of these and understand what is happening. There's so many things, Rick, that I do not believe that the people will stand for if they try to do it. Yeah. The big question I've got is whether they're really going to follow through with this stuff. I think they are. I agree with you about Project 2025. I think they're going to try to do all of this stuff, and they're going to try to pull the wool over people's eyes, but there's just so much you can do to fool people.
Yeah, so last question that I've got for you, because look, you know, I have a lot of my friends who voted for Trump who say, you know, we need a businessman. You know, Doug, we need a businessman to run the government like a business. Should we want our government run like a business?
No, I think we found out the last time that just doesn't really work. I mean, the United States government is not a business. The government is not in the business of making money. A business is in the business of making money. Whether it's for the shareholders, for the owners. We are not in the business. The government of the United States is in a service business. They're not in the business of making money. And that's two completely different mindsets. And that we've got to try to figure out that balance between revenue and expenses. That's it.
Yeah.
And Trump wants to lower taxes for the very rich, for the corporate America, but do that on the backs of folks like me and you and folks that are listening to this show. He doesn't want Elon Musk to be hurt. Elon Musk himself said there's going to be a lot of pain. People are going to have to really suffer for a little bit. He ain't going to suffer a damn bit, okay? That's just not going to happen. And the rich are going to get richer, and the folks in the middle and below are going to be the ones that are going to have to bear the brunt of that pain. Yeah.
Welcome to the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. Leave me with something positive.
You know, look, I something positive is this is still the United States of America. And I think people are resilient. Right now we've got issues that we're trying to deal with on messaging and tribalism and those kind of things. But I think that at the end of the day, remember, this was not the overwhelming landslide that Trump and his people say it was. It is not. He barely got the same amount of votes that he got in 2020. It's just that the Democrat got so much less. It is, we did not win all of these states by very much. It was still, it was an electoral college win, but it wasn't as big as Obama's and Biden's and others. So I think that there is still a lot of hope. There's still a lot of things that people can do. And it's not just about having hope. It is, Rick, people need to go out and do those things to create hope, to make sure that they're doing things. Take these opportunities. You know, I almost hate to quote him these days because his son is such somebody that I just absolutely think is going to drive this country to ruin. But his father was one of my political heroes, and that's Bobby Kennedy. The late Bobby Kennedy, he used to say, we all wish that we lived in more tranquil times, but we don't. And if our times are difficult and perplexing, so too are they challenging and filled with opportunities. We need to see this right now as some opportunities to be better than what we're seeing coming out of Trump world, to be better than what we were 2 days ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, and to take the opportunities to do those things, to talk to our neighbors and to reach people and come out of this on a positive way. And so I think the American spirit and the American people absolutely have that in them.
There you go. Amen. I'm with you. Doug, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
You got it, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks so much, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Want to hear your thoughts. You looking forward to the future, or are we a little concerned? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the evening when a crowd began to gather at the Cooper Union in the heart of New York City's shirtwaist garment-making industry. A meeting had been called by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, Local 25, to discuss whether garment workers should go out in a general strike. Working conditions and pay throughout the industry were abysmal. It was common for workers to toil 11 hours a day with only a 30-minute lunch break 7 days a week. But organizing all these workers was a challenge. Many spoke various dialects of Yiddish or Italian, so organizing had to take place in multiple languages. But slowly, the organizing efforts began to build and show results. Pickets and walkouts were held against some employers. The union called a meeting to discuss what to do next. They voted to strike after a stirring speech in Yiddish from Clara Lemlich, a founder of the ILGWU Local 25. The strike came to be known as the Uprising of 20,000. It lasted until February. In a settlement, more than 300 factories agreed to recognize the union. A song from the educational department of the ILGWU captured the spirit of the strike. The lyrics began, "In the black winter night of 1909, we froze and bled on the picket line. We showed the world that women could fight, and we rose and won with women's might." The song continued, "And we gave new courage to the men who carried on in 1910. And shoulder to shoulder we'll win through, led by the ILGWU." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
If you get a chance over the weekend, and you got a couple hours, you want a little entertainment, the documentary Idiocracy, a movie from, I think, the early 2000s. It's the dumbing down of America. It's the story of the guy who was supposed to be the most average guy in the country, you know, being basically frozen. He gets lost, and hundreds of years later, he comes back and encounters society has just crumbled. And it's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be a joke. It's supposed to be maybe a cautionary tale. It's turning into a documentary. So I would highly suggest the movie Idiocracy, especially the first 5 minutes, which is scary interesting. But because I think we're heading there, you know, President, you know, Macho Camacho, Terry Crews's character is the president, and well, you got to see it for yourself, and I'm highly suggesting you check out Idiocracy so you see what the next 4 years is kind of going to look like, because when your education secretary when your education secretary is an executive with the WWE, I think we've now kind of walked. No, but Rick, she's an executive, run a large firm. She knows a lot of stuff. You know, she's smart. She's a smart businesswoman. Yep. Okay, I get it. But more importantly, she's a big donor to Trump. And again, it's the TV stuff. It's the show. It's the Trump world. You know, we've got Fox News hosts. We've got, you know, Dr. You know, people who push, you know, crazy vitamin stuff. Dr. Quack. Dr. Quack going to be the head over at Medicare and Medicaid? Seriously? A guy who believes that not everyone should be entitled to health care? I mean, you know, I asked Doug Jones a moment ago, and I said, look, do you think we could be that country that would watch people die in the streets? And I truly believe someone like Oz at the helm, I don't know anymore. So when you look at where we are as a country, it's a little concerning, and we should all be a little concerned and eyes wide open. You know, I've had so many people go, Rick, you know, I'm just going to drop out. I'm not paying attention. I'm turning it all off. I can't take it. No. That's what they want. They do so much to cause so much chaos and grief and pain that they hope you'll turn out. They hope good people will stay silent. They hope good people will not turn out. But now, my good folks, now this is when you should be turning out and tuning in the most, because this is a dangerous period. And you do need a good laugh every once in a while, and Idiocracy will get you that. And then what you do is you take that documentary and you compare it to what's going on in the Trump administration as they build this out, this circus out. And it gives you, it'll give you something to compare. So big fan. Hope you'll do it. Want to hear your thoughts. When you do, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I want to hear what you think, especially what you think about the nominees and what those confirmation hearings might look like. If they do it, look, they may just skirt the whole rule of law.
Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com.
This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy.